Welcome to the Airport Lounge. I'm your host, Airport. This podcast is aimed at providing deeper insights into all things Web3, including the stories of prominent figures, builders, and community members generally operating in this space. My guests today are Carl and Callie from the 24/7 Comics team. I've known these two since my early days in the Web3 space, when we all met through being early Azuki holders. Since then, we've had the pleasure of meeting in person at NFT NYC and have remained in touch ever since. In today's episode, we discuss their project, 24/7 Comics, which I've been following since it started. As you'll hear in this episode, Carl's prior experience from Hollywood and traditional media has translated in a super interesting way in the Web3 space, and there are definitely some interesting things at work under the hood with 24/7 Comics. I take conflicts of interest very seriously, so as a general disclaimer, I hold several Biplane Bobo NFTs from the first collection put out by 24/7 Comics, and I've been invited by Carl to mint a 24/7 studio badge, which I intend to do. As always, nothing in this podcast should be construed as financial advice. Please do your own research fully before deciding to make any investments. And before we get into the podcast, I also want to take a moment to thank the sponsor of today's episode, which is Origins NFT. Origins started out as an alpha group with custom data analytics, but has since transformed into a community of traders and kind of a hub of builders in the Web3 space. Anyone who's followed me on Twitter for some length of time will have seen me post the occasional Origins chart together with some analysis. It's been my home base since I entered the Web3 space, and the team has been busy building out a terminal with even more functionality, more tools, and a better trading experience for everyone in the Web3 space. So, if you're still looking for a community to call home, do check out Origins. Pop into the Discord and ping me or one of the mods in the comments channel if you have any questions. Thank you, as always, to Origins for sponsoring this podcast. And without further ado, let's get into today's episode with Carl and Callie. So let's get right into it. I obviously have been chatting with you guys a little bit beforehand and have been looking into 24/7. I mean, I just copped a couple of Bobos myself because I had, you know, I revealed two of the absolute floor ones and I was like, this won't do. So I went back and bought a couple of the 15-point Bobos, which I'm excited for. Yeah.
Thank you for the support, Airport. I mean, it's awesome. I feel like we've known each other forever.
I know, actually. Well, it's interesting because I sort of met you very early on in my own, like, sort of, you know, Web3 journey and stuff. So it's been nice to keep in touch and nice to see what you're getting up to with the whole project. But, I mean, let's talk about the points thing. So you guys have put this out on your Twitter, but you guys are planning to burn the original sort of Bobo collection for points that'll be redeemable for a couple different things. What is that going to sort of look like and how did you guys come to that?
I mean, it's coming up. I don't know how much we release, how much we can talk about, but the thinking around that is really just about a new approach to what tokenomics could potentially look like. I think a lot of folks, obviously have been in DeFi and are familiar with the kind of returns that you get from staking and whatnot. I think for us, it's really playing with some of those mechanics in our way. And by owning that, the burn initially is really just to create a new credit system that we could give back to our holders. And also, at the same time, if you want to be part of the Biplane Bobo program, and participate in the characters IP going forward, that's okay too. But I think the idea is just to give people choices and just know that over time, the supply of Biplane Bobo will go away as people burn and redeem for future collections. And, you know, we'll see how that plays out. But we just want to have some fun with it. You know, I think at the end of the day, Web3 is about trying new things. And that's kind of our version of onboarding a new community.
Yeah, no, I love that. And you know, it's interesting because when I was shopping, I kind of went through and looked at some of the, you know, above floor Bobos and the ones that are colored, and the Kabuki one in particular, it's stunning. You know, it's really nice when you look at it in sort of full resolution.
Yeah, I love that one. I mean, this was a free mint, right? That's kind of how it started. Mm-hmm. And when Kelly and team came on board, they were all just talking about, like, if we're going to fragmentize this thing, like, how do we do it in a really fun and unique way? And I don't know if people caught this or not, but a lot of the themes of the different Biplane Bobos were based on some of the greats in art history, from Michelangelo, from, like, you know, the Japanese Kabuki to, like, you know, Leonardo. And I think these, if you catch that, you know, you'll notice that at the end of the day, we're big fans of art in general, and we want to use Biplane Bobo as our homage to not just the history of the parallels against Walt Disney and his Steamboat Willie, but also a homage to all the different artists that we love.
I would also say that we wanted to do something a little bit different. There's a lot of, well, first, this was a free mint, like Carl mentioned. And because of the state of the market, we thought that a free mint would be a great way to introduce the community to our ecosystem and give people access, right? So this also is a way to onboard people into what we're about, to have access to our digital reader, a preview for the Genesis comic, and to really see how we think differently. Instead of doing tokens like 1155, where they're all the same, we wanted to introduce some sort of rarity and some sort of adventure. So, right, we later released how each of the credits, like they had different rarities or credits, points assigned to the different types. And it's fun. Like sometimes there's different trait floors. Different people have different strategies. They'll be able to burn for our 247 studio badge. There'll be some spots for that. That's our VIP pass. They'll be able to burn for our first PFP collection, which is called Genesis, that is tied to our Genesis comic that we can talk more about. Or they can, as Carl mentioned, hold on to it and manage the Biplane Bobo franchise altogether, and get rewards based on the amount of credits they own. And there's also different things that happen in our Discord where, for instance, like giveaways, we give special points to our gold and silver Bobo holders, and we have different roles in our server to indicate, you know, if you have 10, 25, or if you have a gold or silver. So it's all been really fun for our community.
That's awesome. Yeah, no, I definitely think it shows, at least to me, you know, when you guys came out, because Carl, I've known sort of about, I guess, the project for a little while. And, you know, you mentioned that you were exploring something. But I think the fact that you guys made the decision to drop a free mint, I think made a lot of sense, especially because at the time, you know, that was kind of the meta, if you will, of the space. And I think understanding that, but also putting your own spin on it, where it's not just a free mint, you know, it's sort of the entry point, and then you guys have things coming after. I think that makes total sense. And it's nice to hear that you guys are able to, you know, find ways to engage with the community and sort of, you know, find, I guess, like this fun and interactive thing with the Bobos, you know, leading into the rest of the collection, which is really cool. I did want to take a step back. So, you know, Carl, you have an interesting background that sort of leads into this. And actually, I was pretty blown away by your background when we first talked about it, because, you know, you're sort of, you've done a lot of things. Why don't you tell the story of how you kind of got into, I guess, media in the first place, and sort of what brought you to here?
Man, in short, media, I kind of fell into it. But at the same time, I always say, if I grew up knowing that there was this career path, I would have pursued it 100%. But, you know, I grew up in Hong Kong, came here as a young kid. And, you know, like most Asian American kids, like you're told to be a doctor, accountant, or a lawyer, right? And so I literally went to college initially with a full ride pre-med. And then ended up transferring to USC Business School because I just didn't see a use for a pre-med degree at the time. And so fast forward, I ended up falling into this world of party promotions and then nightlife promotions. And the company grew. And then I fell into artist management when I started meeting some of these artists that we were touring through our clubs. And then that was kind of like my big light bulb moment that, oh man, I could like travel the world and actually be part of the influence. And then, you know, 15 years into that, I kind of hit this, you know, quarter life crisis and felt like, man, I can't do this forever. Seeing just the world pass by behind me. I think I told you, Airport, how, you know, I've been in 14 weddings and best man 4 times. And I was like Peter Pan, right? Everyone's like getting married. I was growing up and I'm still like, you know, traveling the world, like, you know, and it was fun, but I had to make a pivot and I got really lucky. I was taken up, you know, under the wing of a producer in Hollywood who really showed me the ropes in a way that I didn't think is possible and really trusted that I would pick up, you know, what this could look like. I did take a detour from that because he actually needed help with producing events. And so I did. I helped him with a lot of events. And then over time, I started producing events for other producers in Hollywood. So we started working with Marvel Studios, started working with Fox, you know, Dungeons and Dragons. And pandemic hit in 2020. And that was actually when a lot of this media stuff shifted in a great way for me personally. I was able to run into an old friend, and then it turned out that we both were in a part of our life where we wanted to pursue and just produce content. And then so we end up partnering to go after some comic book content, trying to figure out how we could turn them into film and TV shows. We're kind of wondering, like, why haven't some of these been, you know, adapted yet? And what we found out was most of the movie studios had optioned them already. And in a way, they kind of lock up the content so some of their bigger characters and bigger stories can stay there, right? And so when we started talking to different creators, we realized they actually have a lot more stories to tell. And so what that kind of ignited us to do was, hey, you know what? Why don't we just back them and their stories? And so that's kind of how the whole comic book company came together. Truthfully, we were just trying to do one. And fast forward 2 years later, 2021, we had 6 books in production. And so we didn't come up with the 24/7 comic name until I think this year.
That's amazing. And just so I'm clear, so when you say that, you know, studios have optioned these IPs, they buy the rights to create, you know, the sort of film or TV series, but they may not necessarily pull the trigger and actually do it, right? Or am I mistaken? Mm.
Right. So what they call is a development hell. Mm. So a lot of times if there's, for example, like a book about basketball, that's awesome. Everyone loves it. And they, you know, everyone's like, man, this would make a great movie. Sometimes, I'm not saying all the time, a movie studio, if they're lucky, would come and option it and say, let's make that into a movie. But other time, they may look at their portfolio and be like, oh man, we have this LeBron James movie coming out. Let's option it and never make sure it never gets made. So like that, both situations happen. And unfortunately, that happens a lot with comic books. But that's not really the main reason why we moved into a comic book company. A lot of it actually has to do with our conversation with our creators. We actually learn a lot about their lifestyles, kind of like, you know, actually one creator shared with us, which was kind of heartbreaking because they've been working in the industry for like 20 years. And they said, sometimes I feel like I'm a prisoner to the art, to the craft that I love, because there's not many ways they could go to get their books published. They could really only go to the big two, which is, you know, you're paid, work for hire. You're basically told what to write, told what to draw. But you get to draw big characters, so your names do get out there. But then on the other side, there's like the creator-owned books where you take your own chance and your own time to create these books, but you're 100% taking all the chance. And so basically all the risk, a lot of times we hear about these successes, but you also don't hear about all those, you know, 90% that spent a year working on a book and didn't get a dollar of it. And so we realized that the industry itself is up for a disruption. And so that's why we chose Web3, and that's why we went down this path.
Yeah, amazing. No, I want to pull on that thread because I think this is the sort of very interesting thing for me in terms of, you know, conceptually, I guess, what you guys are trying to do. But I think, you know, why? Because in a sense, right, if you were looking to sort of publish these books, and I think maybe originally when you first thought about this, you know, it may have been a more traditional model where, you know, you're just sort of, again, producing or sort of working on the back end, sort of bankrolling it and sort of making sure that you have a go-to-market strategy for these new IPs and stuff. But what sort of changed that made you decide that you wanted to create a comic book studio that was Web3 based and sort of, you know, grounded in NFTs?
Sure. We actually did have a few conversations with distributors as well as kind of service providers that would basically get our books into the market. None of those conversations ended at you guys will actually make money. In fact, most of those conversations says ended at you guys will lose a lot of money. But don't worry, guys, you're going to get an option for film and TV. But what was interesting was, you know, we're usually the guys on the other side trying to option for film and TV. So it was kind of a weird, you know, weird feeling to be told that you're going in to throw money away. So we just didn't understand that. And then when we then thought about what we knew about the artists and what they're going through, at the end of the day, like, it made sense. It kind of built this full circle. Like, okay, now we understand why the artists are kind of stuck in a business model that hasn't changed for 30 years. It's because the business model of comic books hasn't changed in 30 years either. And so they're the ones that end up having to pay for it, right? And at the same time, I think what's been, you know, another discovery was at the studio level, they have purchased a lot of the big comic book companies already. And so a lot of the comic book companies' objectives now are not to tell new stories or not to take new risks, but to maintain the large IPs that they already have. So a lot of times, I don't know if you heard, DC Comics, a lot of people refer to them as the Batman company. And so I think you've seen so many Batman movies already because that's their, you know, golden goose.
Yeah.
So it's not a priority to try to take risks and spend more money on more comics. And I think why Web3 makes sense is because I think in Web2, as much as it was a disruptive model, when it comes to like the webtoons of the world, Tapas that, you know, sold for millions of dollars, they did carve out a new audience. it actually does not disrupt the traditional comic book space. The traditional comic book space, we always wonder, like, what happened to all that money? I mean, back in the 90s, Jim Lee's X-Men number one sold like 9 million copies. So that's just one example, right? Mm-hmm. And what we realized was the dollar amount being spent on comics and pop culture is more than ever. So it didn't go away. The difference was people were actually spending that money on secondary market. So they're going back to buying the stories that were kind of deemed the classics and the blue chips over and over again, instead of investing in the new direct sales. And so you're seeing the direct sales just going down. And it makes a lot of sense, because if they're not investing in new stories anymore, they're probably not telling really good stories. Mm-hmm. And so our bet is on the creators, that if it worked for us growing up, it should work now if we allow them to basically tell the stories they want to tell and be passionate about it. And so far, so good. I think a lot of the artists, some of the work they're sharing with us, I hope they're not lying to our face, but they're saying it's the best work they've done so far.
No, I hear that. I think it's, you know, I thought of something as you were saying that, which, you know, all makes total sense. And, you know, I appreciate how much thought must have gone into this. But I think, you know, if you think about the Japanese manga industry, right, like that's a very, you know, booming industry. New IPs still make it out. And there's an infrastructure for it, right? Because if you sort of get into, let's say, Shonen Jump Weekly or something, you know, that becomes obviously like a new series, and, you know, people push it out, and that's a new IP that then turns into some, you know, hit anime. And that's a massive industry, right? But we don't really have that, I guess, in other parts of the world outside of, I guess, like, you know, Korea has their thing as well, the manhwas and stuff. But, you know, you don't really get that as much, I guess, in North America, where, you know, these new comic book IPs kind of come out. And I kind of was looking through some of Sean Chen's work, and my God, I mean, he's such an amazing artist, you know, and I feel like it's, you know, not only the art, but like if you can get onto a good story, it's just, it could be incredible, you know, and you create a new infrastructure for something to get out these new IPs in a way that I think would be very disruptive. And you know, I think it's a fascinating take on the industry as a whole.
And why Web3 makes sense too is, in a sense, we're trying to combine all these worlds that you just mentioned, mm-hmm. manga, manhwa, traditional US comic books, because I feel like Web3 is targeting such a global audience. We also want to format and bring all these groups together. And so you're going to see the different titles that we launch is going to cover all those segments, because we believe that we want to cater to all these different audiences. And if you're able to leverage one title to introduce others to the other side of the world, I think there's a cool play there.
Yeah, awesome. Callie, I wanted to ask you as well, sort of how did you get involved with the project, and what are your sort of day-to-days as well in terms of managing 24/7?
Oh, okay. So I started off as a mod, because I've been mm-hmm. friends with Carl for over a decade. And when he onboarded me into the NFT project that we're all big fans of. And mm-hmm. I think that really made me value Carl and his insight into the Web3 space, because that community turned out to be so pivotal for me, and my trust and feeling of like comfort and belonging in the Web3 space. And from there, I dove head in to become a Web3 degen, and basically like living on Discord and Twitter 24/7. And so I was working on other projects. I also help build and advise other projects and alpha groups and different things when I'm needed. But Carl said, hey, I'm launching this project. We're going to have a Discord and Twitter. Can you help out? Do you have bandwidth? And I said, sure. So I was just a mod. And I think my job was to host voice chats every Sunday, voice chat hangouts. And so I just, you know, I've been there pretty much in the Discord from the beginning. I'm just trying to support Carl wherever I could. And so got to see behind the scenes about, what they're building and the evolution of everything. And how I got on board is when they were preparing to launch their first collection, Carl asked if I would be open to building a Web3 native team to help with the launch of all of that. So I put together a team, and I supervise those three teams currently. So it's marketing, community, which is the Discord and the mods, and partnerships, which is anything from whitelist collabs to actual longer term partnerships. So I'm pretty busy with those categories. I think they span pretty much all of the Web3 side. And then I try to work across the different I guess departments, for lack of a better word. We're pretty flat structure, but I participate in, you know, helping with the PFPs or helping with the product side sometimes, and, you know, referring people to do auditing for our smart contracts. So it's really, we all work together, and it's been such a pleasure and privilege working with the people that Carl already put together and assembled. They're really superstars.
Yeah. And what do you think about, I guess, working in the space? Because, you know, one of the things that I kind of find with all of my friends that, you know, sort of end up doing this full time and really sending in stuff. And even, you know, I guess even if you're just being a degen and kind of trading and stuff, but it's a very all encompassing space, right? In the sense that, you know, you're always on Discord, you're always on Twitter, your notifications are going ham, you know, like how do you guys both find that? I mean, it must be completely different from what you're used to.
I guess I'll go first. For me, I'm still figuring out how to have any sort of balance. I think even in Discord, people send me messages and it's like, you're probably awake right now because you never sleep. and usually I respond. I think Carl has been pretty good about trying to encourage me to figure out how to have that balance. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, with the Web3 space moves so quickly and things are always changing and you need to know the meta and you need to be on top of trends and you need to adapt, right? And so how do we do that for our project and how do we do that in general to keep on top of certain trends and actually to even move ahead and build differently? So there's a lot of constant checking of things, and then to turn my mind off even when I'm not staring at a screen is also difficult. But I think that what keeps me in this space is the excitement and the learning and the passion and the depth of relationships, even with you, Airport, mm-hmm. That we've been able to make and maintain and even translate into real life.
100%. No, I totally agree with that. And I think it is a very unique experience, right? Like, I think, you know, before I got into NFTs, I think there's this whole idea of like, oh, it's just, you know, crazy, crazy concept of buying these pictures online and sort of, you know, all this kind of stuff. But, you know, you sort of do realize that the community aspect of it and sort of making friends with people is very strong. I think that became very real for me when we were all in New York, because I think, you know, seeing people in real life and sort of interacting with people, you're like, holy crap, this is like so, it's so different. People from different walks of life, you know, I think being able to, I guess, have these conversations with people and just sort of like learn things about people who've led very different lives from yourself is a very fascinating thing for me in particular. And, you know, it's it's been a treat. I sort of think back to this funny moment where, you know, speaking about working 24/7, I was at the Everi event in New York, and I was supposed to see Carl there. And he had to take a call. He was on a call basically when he showed up to the line, and I was like, yeah, cool, you know, I'll see you inside, kind of thing. And went inside, basically hung out there for like 30, 40 minutes, and I went out and he was still standing on the street on this call. So I feel like, you know, no stranger to always working, Carl, you know.
It was really funny, actually. That I think we had like a row of people that were on calls. I think it was like, I think JR at Yuga Labs. It was Jimmy Wong, who was also at Yuga Labs. I think one other person was also, Daniel, who I think works with another group, and we were all like literally lined up against the wall and everyone was on calls, and it really like was like the epitome of what Web3 is, because you're literally working 24/7, and in a way that's kind of how the 24/7 comics came around, because I think mm-hmm. by design, you know, we really want this to be you know, global facing, so our goal is really just for people to always be tuning in to our reader at all times. And the goal is also to be more of an HBO in a more curated fashion. And so that each title actually gets real attention when it comes to promotions. And so, you know, that's kind of it's pretty funny. Just remembering that moment. But actually something about Callie too. I think she's like the epitome of 24/7. She really does work that much. And often I think like, you know, most folks would probably be like, oh man, like, keep going. I think as a colleague, I have to like call her to like work less.
Yeah.
And so it just speaks a lot about her work ethics for sure.
Airport knows a lot about it, I'm sure, from his you know, past job experiences as well.
Gosh, don't remind me. I mean, you know, it's funny, Callie, because...
Yeah, you guys have a shared past.
No, for sure. Yeah, because, you know, for anyone that doesn't know, you know, Callie used to also be a lawyer. And I think it's funny because I think talking to you guys about, you know, the transition from like Web 2 to Web 3, and even this whole idea of, you know, comics and sort of moving to the model that you've chosen. It's an interesting one for me because this is something I feel pretty strongly about, right? I feel like law as a profession is one that's very gatekept. And as a result, it's a very opaque and sort of, you know, kind of not very, it's not obvious what lawyers do, right? And because of the gatekeeping, it's very hard to break into that industry in the sense that you need to, you know, if you're in the States, you need to do an undergrad, and then you need to do a JD, which is prohibitively expensive. And then you need to do, you know, the bar course and then sort of try to get a job at a firm. And that's just all like, it's just so much to do, right? And it's kind of the same in Hong Kong in a different structure and elsewhere in the world and stuff, where it's just very difficult to become a lawyer. And I can kind of understand it to some degree, but I do think that there's importance and there's value in democratizing, you know, knowledge and information and sharing with people who may not otherwise have access to this kind of stuff, because otherwise, you know, it's this idea of just hoarding all the info, right? And it kind of makes me think about, you know, what you're saying about all these studios that are just optioning all of these IPs because they don't ever want it to be made into a thing that might compete with whatever they're doing, or, you know, for whatever other reason, that's a business thing. So, you know, it resonates very strongly with me, I suppose.
And there's no complaints from some of these comic book companies either, because some of these comic book companies are getting renewal fees every year. Mm-hmm. So if they don't need to work and they're getting, you know, free money, why not? But what I think often happens then is they're missing out on what could have been,
yeah.
You know? And so, yeah.
No, I fully get that. I fully get that. So what is the plan for, you know, 24/7, I guess? Like, it, you know, you mentioned The Reader a couple times here. So as far as I'm aware, you know, you guys have a plan to create an online reader for all of the comics. Is that going to be token gated? So only sort of people who hold NFTs, or are you going to do like subscription model, or how's that going to work?
So The Reader for us is actually a really key part of 24/7 Comics. For us, it's funny you mentioned Shonen Jump. We think that's probably one of the better readers. Mm-hmm. And so for us, it's kind of, you know, I think imitation is the best form of flattery.
Absolutely.
And so for us, we did take a lot of inspiration from that. Second, though, we also added some of our own kind of American perspective. Obviously, we're going from, you know, left to right, flipping from right to left versus left to right. Mm-hmm. And then second is we are going to be leveraging The Reader to give utility to projects that we love and respect. So there are a number of projects out there already that often, you know, we know a lot of our friends have these bags, like huge bags of like different NFTs. So what if we were the ones that create utility for some of these NFTs? And so that's number two. And then three, our goal is to make it a marketplace where artists can actually sell their original one-of-one art. Mm. Obviously, I think the one-of-one meta has been a thing recently. And so for us, what's more, even more interesting, I guess if you see the back of my wall, I'm just a huge fan of comic art. And why I'm a huge fan is not just because I love hanging on my wall or like flipping through them and looking at them. I love them because it actually supports the artist. If you were to ask like an average artist how much they get paid to create comic books, for the most part, if you average out the hours and what they actually get paid, they're probably in the poverty level for the most part. Mm-hmm. And often how they actually make up for that is they sell the original art. So they could actually then have margins towards that. And that's been kind of from day one history. Well, not day one. There was a moment in time when a lot of the there was a lot of controversy where the big studios kept the art and would sell them themselves and not give it back to the artists. But there was some shakeup in the industry where eventually they kind of gave back the art. And then, but imagine now, that's the traditional artists, but some of the newer artists, they don't do traditional anymore. They're all digital. So if they're only doing digital and they're getting paid minimum wage, how are they able to grow their careers without selling the original art? And so one of our big goals is really to allow artists to sell their one-of-ones on our reader as well.
That's awesome. Yeah. And have you figured out the payment structure? Because this is something that I'm actually quite curious about, because, you know, there's a lot of discussion right now around projects trying to figure out streams of revenue, which I think is important, right? It's sort of healthy for a project to have, you know, its stream of revenue rather than just depending on, I guess, NFT royalties. You know, is this going to be something that's open to people to sort of like pay for and subscribe, or is this something that you're going to try to sort of more move towards the direction of token gating?
We're starting with token gating. Like I mentioned before, it's about being like the HBO of the world, of the comic world, because we really want it to be curated. And imagine when you engage one of our collections, like for example, Blind Pain Bobo, you are also a holder, a partial holder of one character. And this character will appear in a future issue. We don't know when, but he will. But as we launch our collections, those characters could also potentially fit in one of the future issues. So we feel like it makes a lot of sense for us to give motivation for folks mm-hmm. to want to be part of the project through ownership. And that's the direction we're going to go for now. I'm not saying that it might not change in the future, but that applies to both our own collections as well as some of the collections we're playing a part of.
Yeah, no, that sounds great. And I guess part of that also entails, you know, you guys have other collections that you will be launching over time as well, right? Obviously, starting with Bobo, and then you'll have your, you know, sort of the past that's coming out. And I think after that, you know, as new IPs come out, are you intending to sort of also drop new NFTs with those, or sort of how does that all kind of look?
So the future collection, we probably want to keep that under tabs for now. But sure. We'll probably have yep. different angles based on the story itself. Because mm-hmm. at the end of the day, you know, they say story is king. For us, we're led by our creators. And so we want to just be a supporting platform. We want to engage the community to be a supporting platform for our creators. And at the end of the day, really lead a lot of the creative decisions up to them. All I can say is I've already had discussion with our second collection and the creator team, and they have some really fun ideas as to how they want to approach the NFT market, which I don't think we've ever seen before. And so sometimes I think having some fresh insights from the outside, you never know what you're gonna get. But then that's kind of when I would take these concepts and then pass to Callie and her team and get their insights and thoughts on how to actually implement and engage the Web3 community.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. It makes a ton of sense. And I think it's nice too, because it's sort of through what you're doing, and I guess through the people that you know, you're bringing in a lot of people, you know, that may otherwise not have found their way to Web3, which I find quite interesting, right? Because obviously, like, the people that you're interacting with are sort of very serious artists, and, you know, sort of giving them, you know, this way, this natural path to come into Web3 is awesome. Because I think we get, you know, better... We get a different perspective, and we get also, you know, a lot of artists that, you know, do great stuff that contribute to the space, right? I'm wondering if you get a lot of resistance when it comes to trying to sell, you know, the idea of Web3 to people, because that's one of the big things that, you know, you kind of bring up NFTs in certain communities, and people are kind of like, oh, you know, I don't really want to do that stuff, you know? And I think it's really just coming from a place of not really understanding necessarily, or maybe they hear about the worst of the worst, which, you know, is a thing, but sort of how do you, I guess, navigate that, you know, discussing with people?
It's really emotional, especially with comic industry. I think if you were to search comic books and NFT, I mean, you're going to see all kinds of crazy stuff online and people trying to cancel artists and whatnot. I think one of the things about the traditional comic book industry is it's always been very resistant to change, but I think it's come to a moment where there's no choice. That if we keep going down this direction, not only are the creators going to have to leave, and I've known many creators that has gone on to do other corporate gigs. A lot of them went into gaming, a lot of them went into concept design at movie studios, because at the end of the day, like when you start having kids, you have to think about how to pay the bills, and you can't work 20 hours a day anymore, right? And so I think if we don't make a change soon, I think the industry will suffer, and I think it's going to be a missed opportunity for, you know, future storytellers, because I think the comic book format is the only one that is low budget, but you could tell a story at any budget, if that makes sense. Where I think technology often limits the kind of stories we could tell on screen, but with comic books, it just takes our imagination to make it happen. And what's really also fun about comics is you might read a comic, Callie might read a comic, I might read one, and we all may have very different interpretations, because we're all seeing pieces of art and panels that guides us through a certain adventure, but it's our own imagination that connects the dots between those panels. And so what resonates to each of us will be very different. And that's why you meet comic book collectors and you have a bunch of comic book nerds sitting around a table. We could talk all night about a particular title because there are so many details that we all catch. And that's, I think, why it's so fitting in the Web3 space. I mean, I get sent all these comic book projects. And apparently I was talking to one of our backers and he said, there's a couple comic book companies that are going out for a raise in Web3 and we are listed as one of the competitors. So it's awesome. I love that.
That's amazing. Yeah. And you mentioned backers there. So, I mean, have you guys taken funding for this, outside of sort of?
We did. Amazing. It was also very, I don't think it was intentional. It was actually suggested on multiple occasions where a few folks that we went to advice for, for some advice, actually said, man, have you guys thought about getting around financing? Well, now we're okay. Like we don't mind just kind of keep this the way it is. But a few folks literally just said, we'll write the checks right now. And so, at the time we got very lucky at a really healthy valuation. And so we took very minimal checks and decided to recruit some of these backers. And then honestly, I think it was one of our best decisions because I didn't realize how many comic book nerds there are out there in the Web3 space. And we actually, Cali could attest, some of our backers are like, deep in our community and are like in all the raffles and like winning stuff. And, I don't know if people have that in other communities in that way. Often I think people just write the check and disappear, but we have extremely engaged backers that are like really in this for the long haul. And I think that that's what's made it most special.
Yeah, that's awesome. Sorry, Callie, did you want to hop in there at all? Or?
I know. I mean, I think Carl's answering everything perfectly. I love our community. I just want to say I'm really impressed by how smart people are and how loyal people are. Mm. We have a lot of people who are just so passionate about speculating about I love the Rainbow Bobos or silver's the way to go. Oh, you guys hold the floor, stop listing below this price. Right. And it's just so fascinating how invested they are and how smart they are. And a lot of times, we notice what they're guessing and it's, I have to hold back in my commentary, but I'm just constantly impressed by our community. And a lot of them are our backers or huge backers of other projects. And I'm just always, it's such a blessing to see how authentic and engaged people are in our server.
That's awesome. I mean, that's kind of the dream, right? Because I feel like if you have people financially backing something, I mean, this is kind of the hot issue right now with, VC funding and stuff. Because I think, and I'm kind of working on a thread that kind of summarizes this, because I worked on a number of VC deals when I was still a lawyer, including actually one for VC investment into an NFT marketplace, which was a pretty interesting deal, right? Because you kind of see these VC funds quite cutthroat in what they're asking for, right? Like they really want to take you to town. They want to have basically full control of the business, even if they're investing at sort of 5 to 10%, right? Which is just unheard of. But they're really negotiating hard for this kind of stuff. And that sort of screams, the Web2 mindset to me, versus, you do see some people raising in Web3 and, be it I guess like a Web3 native VC or even just taking from private people who are just like, hey, I have some cash, I'd like to bankroll this kind of thing, and it sort of feels like a very different experience. So I guess I'm curious from your perspective, and it sounds like this is, you guys have this pretty under wraps and it seems to be like a good situation, but do you find that there's ever this thing of balancing, giving back to the people that have funded and then also to people who buy the NFTs and sort of how do you find that divide to sort of work out?
Kelly, any thoughts?
Yeah, I think we're constantly trying to manage everyone's interests all at once. So when we think about how we're going to engage people and give them incentives to stay active or stay engaged with our community, whether it's through minting or participating, we think, even for example, with the Bobo holders, even though it's a free mint, we're constantly thinking, okay, are we engaging the person who holds only one? Are we engaging and rewarding the people who hold 10 or more? Are we engaging, the people who hold the rare ones? And then we're trying to activate at each level. And we're also thinking about, our team members. We're also thinking about the mods, right? We're also thinking about our backers. We're constantly thinking about the Web3 natives, also the comic book industry natives who we want to onboard into this space. So we're always trying to balance activating each person in our ecosystem. And sometimes we can't get it all with each product launch or with each marketing campaign, but we always keep everyone in mind. So that's why we're constantly thinking and maybe not sleeping as much.
Yeah, no, I get that. I sort of feel like this is one of the areas that, you know, a lot of projects struggle with in a sense, right? Because you kind of see, I think some of the projects that I've seen, you know, that I follow and stuff, give a lot of attention and care to, you know, the whales in the community, but not really to the average person, and vice versa, right? There are some projects that I think, you know, give equal rights to basically every holder, but in reality, you know, there are people who have invested a lot of their money into the project and stuff. Mm-hmm. So I feel like there should be some benefit to whales. And that's one of the hardest things. You know, I'm asking you tough questions, but this is one of those sort of very difficult things that I think is managing everyone's interest, right? Because obviously people come in at different levels. It is, though, nice to hear that obviously the people who have given you guys, you know, financial backing and stuff are engaged in it and sort of part of it. Because I think, in my experience anyways, you know, the people that are the most sort of cutthroat and I guess like, you know, demanding in terms of like what they want and what they expect to see are the ones that, you know, usually aren't really engaged. They just sort of see dollar signs. They're just like, oh, this is a good financial decision. You know, it's not because I'm a comic book fan. It's not because I'm actually interested in what you guys are doing. I just sort of see the financial upside potential. You know what I'm saying?
No, there's a hot topic, and that's kind of, you know, I think you hit it on the head. I think it's been a lot of discussion surrounding kind of the buyers of NFTs as well as versus the kind of early backers, right? That's been kind of a little bit of a discussion. And I think for us, you know, I operate very flat as you know, just the way I like it. I think I'm just a very community oriented guy. Like, so for me personally, if you look at my career, everything I've been involved with starts with the community. And I think Callie can relate in that regard. And but I think for us, it's about providing a meaningful shared experience across all levels of commitment. We want people to really take away stories that they could chew on, they could relate to. We want them to own characters that equally can appear, have the same chance to appear in future stories. We want, you know, to have events that are a little bit more intimate so people could get to know each other. And it's not just about, you know, how much you've invested, but if it makes sense for you or not to have those kind of engagements, right? One of the things we talk a lot about too is wanting to connect the creatives with our community. Because I do feel like, you know, kind of piggyback off your earlier question, is there resistance? Heck yeah, there's a lot of fear. I mean, artists are afraid to get canceled, you know? And so I'll say this, a few of the creators initially was going to come into our project as Anon, as anonymous. But then after we launched Biplane Bobo and they saw the success behind the numbers and how kind of popping the community was in Discord, they literally emailed me and messaged me and said, oh yeah, I'm good being myself now. And so we changed everything back to like their real names. And so it was super cool, like just seeing that turn, because it's a true step of faith for them, right? Mm-hmm. And then even this whole merger, what was really fun was kind of seeing folks going, oh, actually, I have nothing to be afraid of anymore. Who cares? I'm going to tell my story and this is the platform I choose. And so having some of those conversations have been super, super encouraging. And I want our backers, no matter if you own one Biplane Bobo or a early backer of ours, to meet these guys, because you need to talk to them and understand how passionate they are about their love for this industry. And also then collectively, we should have a very clear mission to support these guys and help them, you know, live out their dreams, because, you know, life is short and time is our most valuable resource. And even for me, like, you know, I always say comic books saved my life, because I had no friends when I migrated from Hong Kong. And so, you know, this opportunity for us to all embark on the journey to save this comic book industry.
I feel that. You know, it's funny because I had the exact opposite experience where I moved from Canada to Hong Kong when I was a young kid. And I sort of didn't feel like I connected, you know, very well with you know, my classmates at the time, too. So I read a lot of comic books at home, you know, and it's funny because it's literally the exact reverse situation. Where I still have very fond memories of some of my, you know, favorite comic books growing up. I read a lot of Calvin and Hobbes. Nice. So that was a really, really nice one for me, I think. And I read the Archie comics too. I think every time we went back to the States, you know, we'd buy a bunch of Archie comics and bring them back to Hong Kong. And, you know, I probably read those things, you know, 20 to 30 times each, right? Because you're just, as a kid, you don't have that much variety. So you're just reading the same things over and over. But you have some of the fondest memories of that experience, because it reminds you of that comfortable time you have at home where you're just like chilling and you're in your own zone in your space, just enjoying the stories and stuff and the characters. And it's something else, man. I agree with that. Yeah.
No, there is that. I definitely always remember just having a stack of comics, laying in bed and just literally have one arm under, you know, one hand under my head. And then the other arm is just flipping comics. And I just be like that for like 3 hours, like in a zone. And in fact, I learned English reading comic books because I'm heavily dyslexic. And so comics was something I could really engage and connect with, and, you know, was a way I could learn and actually read how English is used. And so sometimes, you know, my wife is kind of like, dude, you talk like a comic book character. And it's true. That's how I learned comics. That's how I learned English.
You found your way to the perfect career, Carl. That's all I'll say. Oh, that's amazing, man. No, and I do really like, I guess, the whole concept of what you guys are trying to do. I think, you know, again, notwithstanding the fact that I'm asking difficult questions, it's because I'm really curious, right? And I think that the answer is, I don't think that there's, I suppose what I should say is the point is that I don't think there is an answer to a lot of these questions, really, because it's sort of what people need to understand, I think, a bit, is that a lot of times when people set out to do something, there's no guarantee of success. There's no guarantee that, you know, you have everything figured out at the outset, right? Because you, in many respects, I think, don't even necessarily know what problems that you'll face as a company or a project or just, you know, venturing into the space that's so new and so novel, right? So at the end of the day, it sort of does really feel like most of the time, it's really just about, you know, can you figure it out as and when things come up, right? And I think that calls into question like your experience and sort of your approach towards the space and sort of, you know, the way that you look at things, right? And I think that to me is actually the most important thing, right? I mean, I'm sure there must have been countless things, you know, between when you guys first started thinking about this and until now and challenges and stuff that you guys have had to overcome, right?
It's been really fun. I've learned a lot. Like, you know, Callie says she loves learning. I do too. Like, I think we're a bunch of learners, and that's why we like this. Because, I mean, you know, I haven't had as long of careers in the corporate space as you guys. But for the two corporate jobs I had, man, it was hard for me. It was just really hard. So I all the respect goes out to you guys for, like, lasting the length of time that you guys did. Because for me, it was really important. It's always been really important for me because my dad's a pastor. So I grew up in a church. And, you know, in Hong Kong, we were, like, in a house church. So I was surrounded by their work, right? Quote unquote work. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of times, you know, in corporate, they always say nothing personal. And to me though, like, everything's personal. Like, at the end of the day, like, you want to work with people that you want to spend time with, right? You spend most of your time with people you work with. So to say mm-hmm. it's not personal, it's just ridiculous, right? And I think sometimes the corporate structure kind of sucks us dry of that humanity. And that's also why I love Web3, because, like, there's so many, like, so much empathy. And so much about the community, and so much about, like, I'll meet certain folks for the first time that I met on the Twitter space, and we're hugging out like we've been friends for 10 years, you know? It's like the strangest thing, right? And then it's like we've only talked on Twitter, right, Airport? And then when you were here, we met like twice. When you landed first time, we met again. And it was, and things like that, just almost like we pick up where we started, and now we're on this call, and you know, it's kind of like I haven't seen you forever, but it's only been a month. And so it's really fun. I think there's something really special about Web3 that I think it's going to disrupt the way of working, even in the corporate world.
Yeah. No, I think that's right. And I think, you know, a lot of these traditional industries are ready for a disruptive, you know, act. And I think even talking about law, and Callie, I'd love to hear your thoughts on this too, but, you know, looking at sort of the way that the traditional model has worked for law firms and stuff, you know, a lot of them are struggling. I think the thing was before that, you know, if you got into a law firm, you would work, and, you know, lawyers are obviously well paid, but most of it was concentrated at the partner level, right? So if you were a partner, you kind of were making a lot of money. If you were an associate, you'd make a decent amount of money for sure, but you'd also be working an insane number of hours. And basically, you know, the traditional idea was once you got to partnership, you had your book of clients and you were able to sort of take it easy. Now that's not really the case anymore, right? Where because it's such a competitive industry, and it's so, again, gatekept and a lot of people concentrating power and money at the top, you have a lot of partners that sort of stick around for a long time and have to work actually harder when they reach partnership and sort of end up, you know, having to try to win business and constantly try to get, you know, new clients and stuff. And really just then more work gets pushed to the juniors who, you know, the pay hasn't really kept up in the same way. So I find it to be a very cutthroat industry and one that's, again, kind of ready for disruption in some sense. But I always feel like law is, you know, several years behind everything else in terms of, you know, tech and progress and sort of moving things forward. But I'm curious, Callie, what you think about that and your experience with it as well.
Oh, the law moves so slowly. And I think, I don't know whether it's with COVID and a global pandemic and people questioning things that people just kind of assumed were established and would always be that way. I feel like a lot of people are questioning a lot of institutions. Mm. And it's no longer we just accept it and move within these systems, but also why are these systems that way? And do we feel like we should stay in them? And then also what can we build now instead? So I'm really excited about Web3. I love Web3. It's so scary, but so beautiful at the same time. Like, I think, I don't know if you guys have experienced this, but whatever industry, there's a lot of like pomp and circumstance sometimes, or a lot of fluff. And what I like about Web3 is you can say that you're a good trader, but the blockchain doesn't lie, right? And if you can say you're good at networking and you're, you know, you love building community, but how active are you on Twitter and Discord? Can you make it into these communities? Can you show your value? A lot of it is just, you know, it is what it is. Like you can't really fake it as much as you could in potentially other industries. And there's certain people who are just so smart and so brilliant. And I like how Web3 gives people access in ways they might not have had. For instance, in certain other countries I've met, or certain age brackets that are running full projects and they're able to show their brilliance and or their dev skills. I just really enjoy meeting people and seeing what they're able to contribute and just learning from all these people. And my team definitely keeps me on my toes as well. They're really, really brilliant. And it's not like, oh, just do it because I say to do it. It's like, I have to explain to them, like, I do it this way because X, Y, and Z. And then, you know, like, it's a dialogue constantly. So I love that. I love how we can build together and I love how we can experience things together. And so many people are branching out and building their own projects or doing their own things in Web3. So it's constantly, you know, just fun and supporting other people.
Yeah, I fully agree. I think it's you know, you see these really amazing stories come out from people that are operating in the space, and I think that's, you know, for me, always inspirational. I guess the flip side is also, you know, you see people that have really no business running their own project or own business and kind of, you know, go out and fundraise through NFTs, and you know, that always hurts me a little bit, right? When you see these founders that don't have experience or don't really have, I guess, the, I don't want to say balls. I was going to say balls, but I think more like, you know, don't have the fortitude, I guess, to weather the storm. And, you know, going back to the original point of like, you know, you kind of have to be able to deal with issues as they come up. Right? And I think that's the thing about owning your own business or starting your own project is you don't really know. You might have an idea of where you're going, but things will go wrong. Things won't work out the way that you imagine them to. And I think when people are faced with that, that's when they make a decision or, you know, need to kind of step up and be like, okay, you know, I need to be able to figure this out. For me, the saddest thing is when people go out and fundraise with NFTs, which, you know, currently is still too easy, right, in a way. I think it's like too easy to sort of, you know, get some dope looking art and basically just like, you know, sell a vision to people and get them to buy. And I think that to me is a bit sad because a lot of people, there's no protection for retail investors and things like this. But, you know, on the flip side, when people, you know, come in who have this experience, who've worked in this space and see an opportunity to disrupt and sort of want to do something really cool, like that to me is like, that's awesome, right? And it sort of galvanizes, you know, new entrants into the space and sort of a lot of cool things happening. And I kind of think that's what I see with 24/7. So I'm excited to see what you guys come up with.
Yeah, I have a question for you, Airport. I mean, you're very analytical. You read a lot. You talk to a lot of different projects. You know, in a way, the way you described this last bull run has been a bit of a Kickstarter meta, right? It's like everyone's a marketer and you're basically just marketing vision and concepts. And then, you know, everyone buys into what you buy. And then a lot, you know, for the most part, a lot of them disappear and people are holding bags, right? And so we're all part of these different communities where like we're in the Discord and we're like, oh, I haven't heard from the founders for like 4 weeks. What's going on? And then you have the mods going,
yeah,
fight on, guys, fight on, stay put. They'll be back, you know, this weird thing that happens. And then in this next, you know, now the bear market. So there's a lot of kind of folks having to reinvent themselves. And, you know, there are some successes, some not. You kind of see like the divide between like the big guys who are reaching really wide versus the folks that are like coming up. So what's your gut on going into 2023? Because I do feel like this fall is pretty interesting. Like, we don't know when we're going to come out of the bear market. We might be surprised, because everyone thought, you know, we would be in a really, you know, deep recession, like right at the beginning of the pandemic, and all of a sudden we pop back up like really quickly. And so what's your gut on things this next meta? Like, what's going to be the most important projects coming out of this bear market?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think about this all the time. So I don't really have like a stable answer in a sense, I guess, because I think there's a lot of moving pieces, you know. But I think generally speaking, for me, I think we trend towards sophistication in the sense that, you know, because we've seen these things happen over and over again, we kind of get this sense for, okay, like this just isn't good anymore, you know. But at the same time, I think if we get new entrants in, they might fall victim to the same tricks, right? Because people haven't been around for that amount of time. A lot of it comes down to experience, right? Because, you know, having been in the space and being, you know, subject to a rug pull or two, you know, and sort of seeing the price action for things, you kind of learn to understand what's going on here, right? And I think that's kind of, in a way, the beauty of the space too, because I think a lot of people have been brought in and kind of learn about, you know, managing a portfolio and basic finances as a result of being in the Web3 space, which I think is really good for a lot of young people. But truthfully, I think there's a balance here in the sense that there will be people that have weathered the storm and stuck around and will be, you know, more experienced and stuff. But I think the next bull run will bring in, you know, new entrants. And so we may see more of the same. So for me, it's kind of tricky, because as much as I think I believe in the narrative of decentralization and not sort of like, you know, I guess imposing limitations on people, I do think that regulation exists for a reason. You know, when we saw the stock market have, you know, the dot-com bubble and all this kind of stuff, where, you know, companies got insane valuations just because they had dot-com in their name, right? Even if their business had nothing to do with the internet. That's kind of where I see NFTs at right now, where, you know, you get an insane valuation just because something is an NFT, but not because it actually needs to be an NFT. And that to me is a massive issue. So I think some kind of mechanism that protects retail investors is good. I think a lot of people, you know, kind of convince themselves that we don't really need that. And I think in some sense, there is that information asymmetry, right? Where if you've been in the space for longer, then you have an advantage over someone that comes in, you know, completely fresh. I mean, when I first joined the space, I lost a ton of money, you know. I sort of went in and bought a bunch of stuff that just, you know, immediately tanked in price. But as I spent more time in the space, you know, I made it all back. And I think that's just because you kind of understand how things work and you become a better trader or speculator or whatever. And I think, you know, that sort of leads to opportunities. And in a sense too, like, you know, through networking and stuff, you know, you might get invited to a whitelist or something that ends up being really profitable. And, you know, there are a lot of ways to do it, but it all comes from spending more time in the space. So for me, I think what I hope to see and what, you know, I think is a difficult thing to achieve, and, you know, I haven't seen a good solution proposed for it, is finding a way to educate newcomers into the space. We're providing some kind of protection for people that come into the space, because while we do need fresh participants, we don't want them to come in and just basically be everyone's exit liquidity and then never come back. Mm-hmm. Because then I think we'll never realize the true potential of, you know, what this technology can actually do.
Yeah, no, well said.
Yeah. But it's
there are projects, Learn to Earn, that are in development. And I do think that's something, actually, it's a really good point. Carl and I, we talk about how do we onboard, like, for instance, the comic book industry who might be scared about Web3. How do we have educational programs in our Discord to welcome them and make them feel safe as well? So the education, cross-education, right? Like, people are Web3, want to learn more about art or comics. How do they do that? But there are people who are doing a good job of trying to put resources into it to figure out education for Web3 in a Web3 native platform. But I don't know if I've seen it successfully executed yet.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. I think, you know, when we see, I guess, a good solution, hopefully it'll get enough signal boosting and stuff that it becomes, you know, I guess, across the board and stuff. But I think that's the thing, right, is where in the traditional space, we would just have regulation, which then, you know, applies to everybody, right? Whereas in this space, it's very much, you know, it's an attention economy in some respects. So how do you get people to, you know, be fixated or guide their attention towards whatever it is you're doing that then has a net positive on the space? You know, I think that's a very, very challenging question for me in terms of like how to answer. And, you know, I do think it comes down to the responsibility of people that are in the space as well. But I'm also aware that not everyone will think that way, right? I think a lot of, you know, the stuff that I try to write about or, you know, contributions that I make to the space personally are towards that direction, because that's something I really believe in, right? Is democratizing whatever information I have in terms of, okay, you know, as an M&A lawyer, I've worked on deals and I've had to do due diligence and we've had to assess, you know, the viability of a business or a company, even at early stages, right? So how can I share that knowledge with people to help keep them safe? But that said, you know, I know that what I write and anything on that won't necessarily, you know, reach everybody in the space, right? And you know, it certainly won't. And I think especially new entrants, right? Like they're not really, there's just so much information overload when you first join the space that it's just so difficult. So yeah, I think that's something that's important. I don't know what it looks like yet. It may end up being, you know, something in regulation, which I think a lot of people may not necessarily agree with, but, you know, in some respects, I think is generally good. I think protection for the average retail investor is something that is absolutely required for us to reach a level of, I guess, actually getting the technology to realize its best use case. And I don't think we're there yet. You know, we're
I also hope there are tools that's going to help us self-regulate, because I do feel like the blockchain is powerful in that regard, where everything you do is on there, right? And then on the other end is the internet is also very powerful, because you can search anyone and who they are will come right out, right? And so I do feel like it's going to be really important, and time will tell as different folks who work in our space. I think there's going to be, it's going to be a little harder to kind of hide who you are and what you've done in the space. And I think that's what's going to be something that really stands out in the long run.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. And I think, you know, I've seen the optimistic take, because I think some of my takes are, you know, lean, I guess, towards a little bit more, I wouldn't say doomsday or pessimistic, but I think, you know, I understand, I guess, fully the challenges that we face as a space. I think that the more optimistic view is, you know, everyone kind of knows now not to open the email from the, you know, Nigerian prince who's asking you for $100 and he'll pay you back like, you know, a million or something, right? But I think that's true, but it's different because, you know, email and I guess the internet actually got to the point where it was kind of ubiquitous and it was something that's used by everybody. I don't know that we're there or that we'll be able to get there if we don't solve some of the more glaring issues that are in the space right now, you know. And I think that for me is like, there's the first hurdle and then we can maybe talk about mass adoption. I don't think it's necessarily inevitable, because if we don't fix these things, then there are a lot of challenges that sort of come up in getting there. And I think, you know, for me, it's like there's stages to it. Right. But, you know, again, I think what you're doing and sort of onboarding people into the space and sort of bringing in people who I think actually find a very natural way to integrate themselves into the space, it is generally net positive for the space, and it does a service for everybody. So I think it's a good thing. I think doing it the right way and obviously being cognizant of the needs of the artists as well as sort of people who buy into the NFT collection and stuff is also really good. I think we need more of that for sure, because right now it's you know, unfortunately, I think, you know, 90 to 95% of projects right now are, you know, vaporware, right? But hopefully we get past this phase. I'm optimistic. I'm here for that exact reason, you know, because I want to see that eventuality, you know, materialize one day. But yeah, that's sort of my take on it.
No, I agree. I think call me a traditionalist, but I never really understood the Kickstarter culture. I always felt like you should have product before you start selling. And so I think if anything else, we have such a, you know, wealth of product from our different artists and different titles that we almost have to organize like what our release schedule is and can look like. And I think a lot of times is finding that balance to not kind of try and throw everything out, which I think I tend to do. And I think you know, thank God that Callie's around to help put things into, you know, more focus and how we release. And so yeah, we have, I mean, I just get excited just because I get to see the art, I get to work with the artists and the writers, I hear their vision, and I want everyone else to read what they're putting on these papers as well. But I think, you know, we want to make sure that every one of our collections are getting proper attention. And so I think, you know, building around these comic stories, it's going to be a challenge for us going forward, really like building the right collection, the right campaign around these stories to make sure that they're serviced in the right and proper way. So yeah, I'm super excited because I think, you know, life is short again, and We just gotta keep on moving and keep learning.
100%. Now I'm excited for you guys, and I'm excited to see, you know, things unfold as they continue to go. Again, I think, you know, coming into the space and sort of bringing your expertise and doing something that you're passionate about, you know, having experience in, you know, similar things in the traditional space is something that's massively valuable for the space. And, you know, I look forward to seeing how this develops over time. I hope we get out of this speculative phase and that, you know, people sort of see that, okay, there's, you know, there's something interesting being built here and find ways to sort of engage with the content that you guys put out. So massively looking forward. We're just above an hour here. So if there's anything else you guys want to sort of bring up before we wrap up, now's your shot.
Dude, comics are fucking cool, man. Not everyone subscribed to Netflix before, but now the whole world does. So read some comics. They're amazing. I'm always available. My DMs, just message me if you need recommendations. I have many friends, and with me, you get a customized, tailored reading list. And so I'll ask you a bunch of questions, and then I'll make some recommendations. And there are a lot of great comics. The comics are not just what you see in the movies. It's so expansive and so provocative now. Like, there's so many great stories out there. So, you know, I feel like if you have time to read, and that's the good thing too, it doesn't take a lot of time. So read comics, and you know, our goal is to be able to build a reader that makes that much easier for everyone.
For sure. Callie, anything else to add?
Yeah, I do want to say that, I guess, to answer your question that was earlier in this podcast episode, there will be a PFP collection or NFT collection that is released for every original title. Mm-hmm. So the manner in which it's released, or the collection size or supply and what each one does, will be revealed at a later time. But there will be at least one NFT collection per original title. The crossover titles that, we didn't really get into, but they are, Carl hinted at that. Those will be released as comics, but not tied to any NFT collection. So there's a lot to look forward to. And then we also have our studio badge. So, and Carl mentioned that we do want to potentially have people who have the NFTs to be involved with future issues of the comic, to maybe see their characters in there. There's a lot that we're building and that we're going to be unfolding slowly. I also do want to say that we didn't really touch on it so much, but I think this might be relevant to a lot of people. We do really want to contribute to the space by bringing more talent into the Web3 space. There's a lot of untapped potential, a lot of talent, and a lot of stories that haven't been told yet. And we really do feel like it'll benefit the Web3 space in general to sort of onboard these artists into the Web3 space and to showcase their art to new audiences. And there's also an element of diversity and representation. Some of these artists are minorities and haven't had the chance or platforms to really showcase what they can do. So hopefully this will check a lot of these boxes, and we're serious and authentic about the things we're trying to accomplish.
Awesome. Yeah, no, that all sounds amazing. And I think that sets us up good for a follow-up episode at some point in the future, which is great. Yeah. But I'm really looking forward to seeing how this unfolds. And, you know, as a comic book fan myself, I think it'll be really nice to sort of see how everything goes. And, you know, I really like both you guys, obviously, and, you know, have followed what you guys have done, and, you know, I look forward to seeing what you guys put together. But thanks for coming on. Where, and tell people real quick where they can find you guys, socials and things like that.
Well, yeah, you can visit us at 247comics.com. definitely click around and make sure you explore to see where things are, and then at 247comicshq on Twitter.
Awesome.
Yeah, those are the two most active, so Definitely come visit and say hi and join our Discord.
Join our Discord, discord.gg/247comics. And then we have official links there. So only click on those links. Beware of scams.
Awesome. Yeah, I'll make sure to link to those in the show notes as well, guys. But again, thank you so much for your time. And it was a pleasure speaking to both of you.
Thanks, Airport. Thanks for having us.
We love you, Airport.